Some figures are cast as heroes and others as villains. Emmanuel Morawiec, the face, voice, and main force behind Czech collaboration with the occupying Nazis during World War II, unmistakably belongs to the latter category. For his actions, he became dubbed the Czech Quisling, a reference to the more famous Norwegian collaborator. In Czechs in History, Chris Johnstone explores Morawiec's complex character and path to collaboration. Chris Johnstone has more.
While Morawiec never wielded the same power as some of his collaborationist peers in occupied Europe, he was perhaps an even more ardent supporter of German aims than many, and attracted even greater hatred from most of his countrymen. Part of that hatred probably stemmed from his seemingly abrupt turnaround from being a vehement advocate of defending democratic Czechoslovakia against Germany. A supporter of President Tomáš Masaryk, Morawiec was even one of the pallbearers at his state funeral in 1937. Historian Jiří Perneš is one of the few Czech historians who has written about the former Czech legionnaire, Czech army officer, military expert and journalist turned collaborator.
Up to Munich, he belonged to those officers who wanted to fight Germany at all costs. They wanted to defend the Republic against Germany even without the help of England and France.
For Morawiec, like many Czechs, Munich was a turning point. It discredited the Western democracies and the international attempts by the second president, Edvard Beneš, to keep Germany in check through a series of alliances. But for Morawiec, there was even worse to come under the short-lived Second Republic, with a new Czech government trying to appease Nazi Germany. He was forced to quit teaching at the main military academy, given indefinite leave from the army, and banned from writing articles for newspapers, one of his main sources of income. Morawiec at one point was even thinking of emigrating to Costa Rica. Some have interpreted Morawiec's transformation as caused purely by his material needs, which included supporting two previous wives and three sons. By March 1939 and the German occupation of the Rump Czech state, he was on his third major relationship with a former maid, which had started 2 years earlier when she was just 16 and he was 44. Jiří Perneš again.
I think that Emmanuel Morawiec, who was the symbol of the worst of traitors, was not just an opportunist. Of course, the attempt to get a secure and comfortable life under German occupation also undoubtedly played a role. Morawiec was a military expert and expert in international politics. At the end of the 1930s and start of the 1940s, he analyzed the international political situation and simply decided that if the expected international conflict that was expected erupted, it would lead to a German victory.
Morawiec, who had left-leaning sympathies in the interwar period, also saw Nazism as a social revolution, and this probably helped in his conversion as well. With trepidation, he feared imprisonment or worse, Morawiec proposed his services to the SS's intelligence service. In spite of his past anti-German stand, he was welcomed. With mainstream Czech newspapers still reticent about publishing openly collaborationist material before the outbreak of World War II, Morawiec turned to Czech radio. From August 1939, he had the opportunity to comment once a month on events at home and abroad. This is one of his earliest broadcasts from October that year, in which he explains his motives for collaboration and the historical reasons for it.
Má úloha nebyla lehká, když jsem začal hlásat smír a spolupráci s ním. Křesťan, kteří vývoj dějin u nás nerozumí, pohanské kněžství.
The German occupiers were happy with the results and offered him more frequent radio appearances. From May 1940, Morawiec was on the air once a week. Some of the early broadcasts were collected in a book entitled In the Service of the New Europe. He also helped the Germans organize a team of Czech journalists who could put their propaganda message across to the local population. Morawiec's role of unrestrained collaboration and obedience to his masters can be contrasted with that of the then Czech Prime Minister of the Protectorate Government, Alois Eliáš, who gave no ground to the Germans unless he had to, and kept in contact with the exiled government of former President Beneš in London. For the Nazis, though, that was precisely Moravec's appeal. It marked him out from some leaders of the Czech fascist movement who wanted to be treated as equals with the Germans in running the country. Mr. Perneš again.
I do not think the Germans liked Moravec. They assessed him very pragmatically and saw him as a person who was prepared to serve them without thinking twice and would carry out and realize their instructions and demands without the slightest hesitation. That is why they supported him.
Moravec really came into his own when Reinhard Heydrich took over as acting protector of Bohemia and Moravia in September 1941. Heydrich wanted a tougher clampdown on what little Czech resistance there was, and more Czech commitment to the Nazi war effort. Moravec formed part of those plans and was made Minister of Education and National Enlightenment, in spite of opposition from President Emil Hacha. At one point he declared there was no need to reopen Czech universities because Czechs did not need them. Moravec also ordered his own ministerial uniform, a mix of Czech army and SS uniform, which he was proud to wear. Part of Moravec's task was feeding the occupiers' propaganda to the domestic audience. Whether Moravec was successful or not is a moot point. But it is some sort of tribute to him that the exiled Beneš government considered Moravec as an alternative target for the assassination squad that was finally dispatched to kill Heydrich. Moravec was one of Heydrich's favourites, and many thought the bald and not very military-looking Czech would suffer from his death. That was not the case. Moravec showed his worth by masterminding the offer of a 10 million crown reward for finding Heydrich's killers. On the domestic front, he succeeded in sidelining collaborationist and fascist rivals. Some were even sent to German concentration camps. This made Moravec the indisputable leader of the Czech collaborationist camp. With the war slowly turning against Germany, Moravec stepped up his efforts to be useful to his German masters. He launched the Kuratoria, a type of Czech Hitler Youth. He also backed the Czech League Against Bolshevism, which was launched at the start of 1944 with the aim of persuading Czechs to fight alongside Germans against the advancing Soviet forces. Both initiatives were failures. According to Mr. Perneš, it is not likely that Moravec ever knew of some of the most radical and far-reaching Nazi plans to deal with Czechs if they had won the war.
I am convinced that he did not know about the final German plans to solve the Czech question. That is, the partial Germanization, partial liquidation, and partial relocation of the population to some place like Siberia. However badly you perceive Moravec, I do not think that he fell that low that he was prepared to work or collaborate with the Germans on the liquidation of his own nation.
He was, however, prepared to denounce Jews in line with Nazi race policy. With the Allies closing in on Prague from east and west, Moravec knew he could not expect any salvation. He decided to commit suicide on May 5, 1945, as the long-expected uprising against the Nazis started in the Czech capital. At the request of the Germans, Moravec was on his way to a broadcasting station still in German hands. They mistakenly thought Moravec could calm things down. The truck ran out of petrol. Afraid of being lynched, Moravec took out his pistol and shot himself through the head. Despite being the prime Czech World War II collaborator, historians, especially Czech historians, have shunned Moravec. Mr. Perneš, whose 1997 book is an exception to this rule, believes shame is probably one of the main reasons.
I think for Czech society, the shame that someone like Moravec could have existed played a certain role. Also, under communism, there was a certain political lack of interest in that dark chapter of Czech history being remembered and retold.
The communists preferred to concentrate on the treachery of the West and Soviet liberation than this problematic personality.
This edition of Czech History by Chris Johnstone was first broadcast in June 2009. We are now rounding off our regular weekday program with Soundcheck.